Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
And you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph and with Eurosport, our second daily tennis podcast from Wimbledon 2017, brought to you today from the commentary box, the BBC Radio 5 commentary box here on court number 2. It's pretty good, isn't it, David?
It's awesome. There are actual people in the stadium still. There's two players still on the court. Svetlana Kuznetsova is set up on Ange Jabeur as we speak to you. And there's thousands of people in the stadium. They're going to be listening to this.
The sun is setting over Wimbledon, but not over court number 2. There's plenty of play still on the outside court. 6 courts still in action that I can see. Kuznetsova is set up here on Ange Jabeur, but Jabeur giving her a real run for her money so far. She's actually winning over a lot of fans here on court number 2. She plays some swashbuckling tennis right on cue. She approaches the net and knifes away a backhand volley beautifully. Over on court number 16, David, Feliciano Lopez, our dearly beloved Queens champion, is in a right spot of bother. He's 2 sets to 1 down. The score in those 2 sets, 6-1, 6-1, to Adrien Mannarino of France. It's 3-3 in the fourth. He'll be desperately hoping for bad light to stop play. There are reports on Twitter he is experiencing some kind of physical difficulty. He certainly had the physio out there. That'd be awfully sad to see him lose.
And it's the story of the day, isn't it? It's just been such a disappointing day in terms of players unable to finish tennis matches. We've had 2 of them involving the biggest matches of the day on the centre court. And as you say, Feliciano Lopez, I wasn't aware of him coming in and having any issues at all today, but 2 6-1 sets Mannarino's won. He's a good player. He ain't that good.
No, just sorry, David, my attention is distracted because just as you were speaking there, Ange Jabeur went down so heavily at the back of the court. Looked very dramatic indeed. The umpire straight down from the chair. She was crowded around by ball boys and the umpire and a line judge at the back. It looked very dramatic at the time. She sort of did the splits, but she is now standing up and returning to her position, receiving serve. So potentially just a false alarm on this occasion, but it hasn't been a false alarm elsewhere, has it? And depending on what your perspective is and how you read into these retirements, the story is different. Is the story that the physical challenges of tennis and too many players? I remember there was that year here a few years ago where there were so many retirements, weren't there, on the opening day, and that prompted lots of discussion about the length of the season and players being injured and the lack of time in between the French Open and Wimbledon and the lack of time for players to adjust from one surface to another. Today and yesterday, but in particular today because it happened on centre court, there were 2 consecutive retirements by Martin Kližan and Alexander Dolgopolov. The retirements have prompted discussion about whether players who know they can't make it through a first round match are cynically motivated to step onto court anyway because they know they'll collect the prize money check whether they make it to the end of the match or not. That is the topic of debate around Wimbledon today.
Yeah, we've just had an incredibly passionate half an hour of debate about it on 5 Live. Mary Pearce and Mark Woodford getting involved and really being quite strong, particularly Mary Pearce on the subject and giving the perspective of the players and saying, look, I'm afraid to say players do not think of the fans really in that situation. They think, am I fit enough to take to the court? And the financial aspects, I mean, they are considerable here at this particular tournament in this day and age. £35,000 comes your way if you take to the court having got into the draw. And yeah, I mean, it is a factor, let's be honest. That's a huge amount of money, even to these millionaires. And the other question mark is, And people are saying, well, you know, they should be bigger than that, perhaps. They should think of the fans. They should think of the lucky loser who could play in their place. The other thing is, this is Wimbledon. Martin Kleesan was playing against Novak Djokovic. Dag Gopalov was playing against Roger Federer on centre court. When is he going to get that chance again?
See, my issue there is I don't know for sure. Without being inside the minds of those two players, I don't know for sure. But I didn't get the impression that it was about the occasion and the opponent today for them. You know, there was no savouring of the moment. Particularly, I watched Dolgopolov's walk off court, and it didn't seem to be one of a totally devastated man whose big opportunity to play Roger Federer on centre court at Wimbledon had been ruined by injury. That wasn't the demeanour that I saw today. It was the sort of shrugged demeanour of a guy that knew that was going to happen and just, oh well, that happened. I thought it was going to happen. Oh well. Look, I don't know. And the same with Martin Kleesan. You know, Novak Djokovic himself said in his post-match interview with the BBC, he said, I knew there was a good chance that was going to happen. You know, I'd heard that Kleesan was really, really injured. And again, he didn't look utterly devastated that his big moment had been scuppered by injury. Now, they could be good actors, they could be the sort of people that we were discussing yesterday that don't wear their hearts on their sleeve and show how strongly they're feeling about something at any given moment. But I think that's the most positive possible spin to put on it, and there could be a very much more negative spin, which could equally be wrong. We don't know, but I know it happens. I know it happens that players step onto court knowing that they won't be able to complete the match, with no intention of completing the match, to pick up the play check. Whether it happened today, we'll never know. But it does happen, and we're naive to think that it doesn't.
Well, we would be naive. And incidentally, if you go back to the US Open of 2015, there were 12 first round retirements. That caused a lot of this kind of debate at the time. There was one match involving Serena Williams in which her opponent retired after 8 games. And Andy Murray at that time was asked all about it. And he said, for me, there's such an easy fix to this. If a player is injured and they're directly into the main draw by right on their ranking, just give them the first round prize money anyway. Don't make them play for it. Allow the lucky loser to step in and play that match. Don't give them anything extra at that point. They'll just be delighted to be out there, and players don't have to go on the court and embarrass themselves by having to retire midway through a match the way players are having to do when they're injured. He also said, if I'd paid money to watch one of those matches back in 2015, he said I'd have been annoyed. So Andy Murray is very well aware of the problem. That was his suggestion. You know, let a lucky loser come in and effectively be playing for the opportunity to have second round losers prize money by winning that match. And the player who has got paid and is injured doesn't bother having to take to the court. That's the suggestion he came up with. Now, a year and a half later, more or less, the ATP have done exactly that. That happens now in a pilot scheme this year on the ATP circuit. It's working. The problem is the slams don't do it, and they need to start.
Yeah, for me, that's game, set and match. I mean, that sounds absolutely ideal. I'm not saying it eradicates the problem altogether. You can't, and you might say it's slightly unfair on the lucky losers, but as solutions go, I think that's pretty nifty. It's rare you have such a convenient fit into a convenient hole in terms of problem and solution. I think it's a total no-brainer. I think it's fantastic that the ATP introduced that. However, the most important place for it to apply to is Grand Slams, because that's where the prize money's the biggest. So the ITF need to just wake up to the problem and introduce it, and then the debate goes away.
Yeah,
and
the slams do, you're right. It certainly takes away the financial pressure. Now, players may still feel this is my big chance to play Wimbledon, centre court against Federer. And frankly, if they do, fair enough to them.
Fair enough. You agreed. But it would take away the more cynical motivation. Just on that subject, before we move on, I've very sadly just seen Feliciano Lopez's match disappear from the score screen, which, given where they were in the fourth set early on, can only mean that he has retired from that match. I can't confirm yet what the injury is. We're waiting for him to come to press. But that's just devastating for him, isn't it?
It's so sad, isn't it? For him most of all, he's probably not going to get that many more chances to be a real contender here. The way he played at Queen's, He was a contender here to get deep into the second week. We know what that tournament can do for preparation for players. He was in great form. Look who he beat there. Stan Wawrinka in the first round. He beat Thomas Burdick on his way there. He beat Grigor Dimitrov.
Your pick for the final, Marin Cilic.
That's right. That's exactly what Feliciano Lopez did just 10 days ago. And here he is, injured. Terrible shame. And we wish him all the best.
Gutting for him, and I'm really, the only good news about this is that I, at the very last minute, removed him from my quarterfinal picks.
That's no consolation, Catherine.
Should I run to the press conference room and mention that to him now?
First question, Feliciano. The bad news is you're out of the tournament. On the plus side,
he's still in yours, is he?
Yeah, he is. Yeah.
There are no exemptions for injury, because if we start getting, oh, I feel for you, David, but
well, you should, so
we
you
can't
should,
make exemptions.
It's
for
all
injury,
about me.
Because
at
then
the end of the day.
What a quagmire we'd be in. What a quagmire. What else has happened today? I mean, there's very little to discuss on the Djokovic and Federer front because their opponents were so hampered and because they spent so little time on court. Djokovic joked in his post-match press conference that the two of them should have gone out there and played a practice set together to give the centre court crowd something to watch. And I thought, yeah, great idea.
Don't joke about it. Just go and do it.
No one's going to stop you.
I tell you, the most interesting thing for me that I felt I gleaned from watching Novak Djokovic today was not during the match, because there was nothing to learn. He's a brilliant player. He played fine. He's through to the second round. The other guy was injured. That's all we know. I got a chance to stand just a few feet away before that match on court number 10, where it's just one of the match courts, but they opened it up just for Novak Djokovic and then Roger Federer to have their practice sessions on. And I got to stand very close to Team Djokovic, this new Team Djokovic. The shock therapy has led to Andre Agassi and now Mario Ancic in his corner. And it was very interesting to watch them together, both in terms of the way things were going. It was Ancic who was doing the hitting with Djokovic.
I didn't recognise Mario Ancic when I saw him on the practice
court
yesterday.
He no longer has the suntan, does he, that these
tennis
players have?
He is about, you know, one of those, like when you're buying fake tan. David Lord does not know about buying fake tan, but just imagine for a moment. They have sort of the shade guides on the side.
Do they?
He has toned down about 15 shades.
Have I got a shade?
Your shade is about what Mario Ancic is now.
Yeah. And he's Croatian. And I mean, he used to be a bronze.
Ah, but he lives in New York now, doesn't he? Although New York's pretty sunny in the summer. Anyway, he's obviously slapping on the factor 50, because I really didn't recognise him. He's quite beefy now. He was always such a streaky chap.
Well, yeah, he was. My mum used to say he was ever so handsome. But anyway, I digress. Mario Ancic, I was standing just a few feet away from with Andre Agassi. There was one moment where a loose ball came to Agassi and he just belted it for a clean winner. And then the crowd went up and Djokovic kind of raised his arm as if to say, come on, yeah, give it up for Andre. And then at the end of the practice session, the three of them came together. And they had like a little three-way fist bump. Ooh. You know, like basketball teams have, when they put their hands in together and they go, home team, and all that sort of stuff.
Oh, that sounds a bit too peppy for me.
Oh, it was great. They're clearly
that's
trying
the
to
sort of vibe that David Law would enjoy.
Oh, yeah.
I'm glad you were there and
that's
not
what
me.
We do at Tennis Podcast Towers, if I'm in charge. If Catherine's in charge.
Catherine doesn't do fist bumps.
It's a sort of
certainly not
just,
three-way ones.
Just go away, David. Anyway, I got to speak to Mario Ancic straight after the practice session.
He spoke to you because he thinks you're half Croatian.
Well, actually, and he said that in his first answer to me. I'm sorry about the name dropping, everybody. Actually, I got told off today by an American listener of ours for apologising for name dropping.
Yeah, but then he said maybe that's just because I'm American, and I thought, it probably is, yeah.
Oops.
Not that it's not, I mean, it's just a very British thing, isn't it?
It is
to be inclined to be modest.
We apologise.
And then to apologise when you're not being modest.
We apologise for existing, really, don't we? That's just kind of how we are. But anyway, so I asked Mario Ancic, can I have a quick word? He said, yes, no problem at all. But what he did say to me, he said, but just about the match. I don't really want to talk about the other stuff. I obviously asked about the other
stuff. Like peace and love stuff?
Well, no, just sort of the dynamic within the team. You know, they don't like giving all that away. But anyway, so I said to Mario, first question, and he said to me, well, first of all, it's a pleasure to speak to the BBC. And he said, and also, of course, to you, because you're half Croatian.
And that it got cut, David.
I know, I was devastated.
That's why he's telling this
anecdote
on the tennis podcast.
It didn't get out on Five Live, so it's got to come out
here. The cutting room floor in Five Live Towers.
It did. So, anyway, that happened. Honest, I was there, and there was no one listening except me. But anyway, he said, he gave a very in-depth answer about Martin Kližan, the opponent, and so forth, but his answers were very clipped and short about the dynamic amongst the team.
That last answer was very clipped and short,
yeah,
wasn't it?
He wasn't too pleased with me.
You asked him about what's it like. You phrased it very well, you know, just about the legend, the figure that is Andre Agassi, and he just went, yeah, it's great. And that was that.
He was very...
And that's a wrap.
Desperately trying not to put any noses out of joint.
But my sense was that this was very much both Andre Agassi and Mario Ancic trying to make the point that the onus is on this guy. It's about Novak Djokovic. It's not about Andre Agassi. I noticed that Agassi was trying not to sign any autographs as he came off the court. He did do a couple, but he very much sort of wanted to let the focus be on Novak Djokovic. And I also think these are embryonic stages in their relationship. They're all trying to get to know each other a little bit. It's all a bit polite at the moment, I'm sure, but that little three-way fist bump, I thought, yeah, they're trying to get something going here. And actually, to me, they all seem to be getting along quite famously. So I'm fascinated to see how this one goes. I really am.
David Law doing live reporting on a three-way fist bump.
So yeah, I'm going to have one later. I just need two other people.
You were speaking about, you mentioned your honeymoon in the Maldives on the radio earlier, David. That was my highlight of the day.
What did I say?
You said Roger Federer looks more relaxed coming off his practice court than you did on your honeymoon in the Maldives.
True fact.
True fact. What else has happened today? Angelique Kerber won through on centre court, didn't she, against Irina Falcone, who put up a fairly good fight. And it was interesting, I wasn't commentating on that. I was here on court two talking about Del Potro Kokkinakis alongside Naomi Cavaday, who was brought into the commentary on centre court on Kerber. And she was asked about how she thinks Kerber has dealt with and enjoyed being the world number one. And she replied, I think she's hated every single minute of it. Which I agree with, and is sort of what I've been saying for a while.
Do you think that's a bit much?
I don't. I don't think she's enjoyed it at all.
She's not enjoyed being world number one.
No.
I don't agree with that. No, she's got to have enjoyed being world number one.
She didn't even look like she enjoyed winning on centre court today. She still looked like she had the weight of the world on her shoulders.
So you think she'd probably rather be number three seed and, you know, not talked about too much and then come up on the rails and win it all?
Deep down, yeah. It's difficult to say, you know, you can't say, I'll give the world number one ranking back, please. You can't do that, can you? It's like, I don't know, I'm guessing here, but if you have a child and they're just awful, you can't give it back. You can't say, oh, I want to turn back time. You have to love them. But.
Yeah. Interesting.
Do you know
analogy.
What I mean?
Anyway, world number one, yeah, Angelique Kerber. I know what you mean. But it was interesting as well to think that. Which was a 6-4, 6-4 match, I think, ended up being the best match of the three because the other two were just damp squibs and nothing happened.
Well, they got Caroline Wozniacki at the end of the
day.
That
was a good one.
Yeah. Was a good one. She won three, but had some trouble.
Yeah, she did. She won it 6-1 in the third, but she was a breakdown in the third set. And frankly, she was helped by Tamea Babos just fluffing an overhead that could have really...
You described it on the radio as one of the worst overheads you've ever seen.
And I've seen my own and yours.
You have. And that is not one of the better
it
shots
was
in
terrible.
My repertoire.
There were line judges diving for cover, I'm telling you.
So Wozniacki is through. Kuznetsova looks like she's going through. She's 4-1 up and serving here on court number two. She will play the winner of Alison van Oytvank and somebody else, which is another match that has mysteriously disappeared from my scoreboard.
Ekaterina
and Ekaterina Makarova.
Didn't I put her in the quarterfinals?
Makarova has won 6-3, 6-1. So
she's
some,
in my quarters.
Not all of David Law's predictions are fully in the toilet. That's a very helpful set of rolling results there on the bottom of the screen. Thomas Burdick won 3 and 4 sets against Jeremy Shardy with zero fanfare at all because nobody seems to pay attention to him anymore. Maybe he'll go and win the thing.
I'd love that.
And nobody
just
will notice.
Stuff it up, everybody. Go on, Thomas.
Grigor Dimitrov won through nice and quietly out on one of the more outside courts. I think it'd be quite good for him to just quietly work his way through the draw. He was on court number 12. John Isner beat Taylor Fritz handily, 3 straight sets in the women's event. Who was on court number 1?
Court number one today on the women's side.
Caroline Pliskova, can't believe I momentarily forgot her there. She's my pick for the title this year, and I still feel that way having seen her in first round action against Evgenia Rodina on court number one today. She looked great.
You did forget all about her, and she wasn't best pleased. She just texted in to, in fact, tweeted into at
tweeted?
Tennis, tweeted to at tennis podcast. No, she hasn't really. She doesn't know anything about it, although she's probably listening. So hello, Caroline. She did forget you momentarily, but now she's back on track. Coco Vandeweghe won today, my pick for the final.
She did. She was in a spot of bother, though,
no,
on stage, wasn't she?
No,
did she go
bother
sit
whatsoever.
Down?
No, she went a breakdown.
Breakdown.
I did hear from Gigi Salmon that it was one of the worst matches she'd ever seen.
Brilliant.
But still,
it's
I
interesting
believe
hearing her talk about how the Pat Cash thing came about and how it was going to be just a Wimbledon thing, and he said, no, I need some more time for it to bed in. So that's they've agreed to work with one another until at least after the US Open.
I'd quite like to be in the room when those two have a chat. I think it could be a really interesting conversation because Pat does not hold back, as we know.
Do you think they talk about politics?
I don't know. I really want to know. I want to know what goes on. So I'm going to find my way into one of their lunches and eavesdrop.
On that note, Dominic Thiem won today, David. My upset watch radar was a bit off today.
Yeah, you were all askew, weren't you? Malfunctioned
horrendously. I didn't see much of it, but the scoreline surprised me. I thought Pospisil would challenge more than
that. I
need
to be fair and say that I also flagged that one.
I mean, Pospisil, he's a former quarter finalist here. He should. I know he's had a horrible couple of years, but surely the grass is. I know. He's had a few injuries, but that's not the whole story. I don't know what's happened to him.
I do wonder whether maybe Thiem benefited because he practiced with Federer today. Maybe that got him going on the grass.
But a lot of the people that I've seen practicing with Federer and Nadal and Djokovic have hit bother this week. That was, or so far this week, 2 days in. That was something I was noting the other day. I've already forgotten who on earth I was talking about. Robin Haaser was somebody that Federer was practicing with earlier in the week. He's lost today, hasn't he?
He was against Francis Tiafoe, and I'm just seeing he lost in four sets. That's a good win for Tiafoe,
great
isn't
it? Great win for Tiafoe. His first Wimbledon win. I love Francis Tiafoe.
Why is that?
He's a great story. He's a great personality. He's got great style on the court. He's a little bit different. He's just great. If he could make it, it's good news for tennis. Sorry, Robin Haaser.
Right.
But that's good news. So, I can't remember any. There are definitely other people that have hit with Federer and Nadal this week that have ended up losing. I promise.
Right. I'll take your word for it, Catherine Whittaker. You've never been wrong before.
I'm going to round up a few other things that happened today. Kiki Mladenovic, she looked very good. Sasha Zverev won through. Garbiñe Muguruza, lots of people thought she might be troubled by Alexandrova of Russia. She wasn't. She won in two straight sets. Kyle Edmund recovered from winning the first set to beat countryman Alex Ward in four sets. What happened with Gasquet and Ferrer? Gasquet was two sets to love down. Did he lose?
I don't know. I don't know what happened. I'll tell you what I do want to know about before I go and find out what happened between Gasquet and Ferrer. What happened between Del Potro and Kokkinakis? You were on that match.
I can't believe I haven't talked about it yet. It was quite the match. There was so much emotion on the court as Kuznetsova and Jabeur approached the net. That's Kuznetsova through to round 2-6-3-6-2. Yeah, so much emotion on the court. As I said, when the draw was done, I was a bit gutted that one of them had to go. I was delighted that physical fitness didn't play a role in that match. It was not a match that was decided by one or the other flaking out physically for once today. It was very much just an entirely tennis-based contest, which was pleasing. Del Potro was just more solid. I did think when Del Potro was on his seventh match point, having failed to close it out on the previous six and having hit a tweener on match point number five, it was completely bizarre. It was just a moment of complete madness. He decided that instead of moving his feet, he would play a tweener from inside the baseline. It was very bizarre. Anyway, he won it in four sets. Kokkinakis, I know it's a cliche, but there are a lot of positives for him to take from that match. He was toe-to-toe with, okay, he's the world number 32, Del Potro, but in real terms, and certainly today, he was a top 20 player at least. So big, big news, big, big developments in the early stages of the comeback of Tanasi Kokkinakis. Interesting that Mark Philippoussis was courtside today. I understand that they're informal coaching arrangement has been made a little bit more formal. I don't think it's quite a formal Philippides is going to travel around the world with him 52 weeks a year, but it's certainly been formalised a little, so that'll be interesting. And Leighton Hewitt was there as well. So as sad as I was to not see Kokkinakis not progress, I think it's basically good news for him, and obviously delighted to see Del Potro progress. Incidentally, Court 2... It's a weird one, Court 2, isn't it? Because it's an entirely ticketed court. And that match should have been absolutely full to the rafters with an extraordinary atmosphere. And it wasn't a bad atmosphere and it wasn't empty, but it didn't have the crowd or the atmosphere that it deserved, because lots of people with Court 2 tickets, unlike with centre court tickets where you'd just be so delighted that you've got to spend the day on centre court and you spent so much money on the tickets that you're blooming well going to sit there all day. If you've got Court 2 tickets, you might spend a large portion of the day wandering around the grounds and seeing what else is going on.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those that you can understand why Wimbledon does it. It's another court that they can get some revenue out of, and people get their ticket and they want to have their seat and so forth, and the matches are good. But you're right, it is a shame that if they go wandering, if they go for lunch, nobody else can come in and watch in their place. So you do get a slightly depleted atmosphere on Court 2. It's just one of those things. Just a quick one, Bernard Tomic, we haven't spoken about today, who he was defeated in straight sets. He came into the press conference afterwards. He said that he took a tactical injury timeout.
He said a lot of things, David.
Just to try to break the rhythm of his opponent. I don't think I've ever heard anybody admit to that before. I mean, that was a startling revelation.
He was startlingly honest in that press conference. Yeah. It was enjoyable from that perspective. It was enjoyable to hear somebody be so frank and honest. And I do have time for Bernard Tomic. That might not be a very popular point of view, but I do think he's basically a good person, perhaps not the brightest in terms of his decision making always. It probably wasn't a particularly bright decision to be as honest as he was today. He told all the journalists that he was bored during his straight sets defeat to Misha Zverev. He says he can't really find the motivation to play tennis or to train particularly hard. He said that he doesn't know where to find that motivation from. He can't magic it out of nowhere, which... It's a terrible shame, isn't it?
It's Wimbledon, and he's saying that. It's really quite shocking to hear it. And I know that you are somewhat sympathetic to him because you think he's a decent enough lad, having interviewed him a number of times. And I get the sense that he's all right as well. And he just doesn't clearly want this that much. He's not that bothered. It's not really for him, I guess.
Yeah, he's burdened with talent, isn't he?
Well, he's burdened with... I don't know, he just... Yeah, he does this...
Yeah, he does it because it's probably...
This is what you do.
...easier and more lucrative than anything else to do, because he's so talented that it's not that difficult for him to be a top 50 tennis player. I know he's outside the top 50 at the moment, but if he's doing what he's doing and earning a decent wage packet without really caring or being motivated... I mean,
I do think there's an argument for fining him, though, for what he said in terms of
surely
bringing the game
the injury timeout thing. He has to be.
If you admit that you've basically abused the rules in order to put your opponent off, we can't be having that.
I assume he will be.
Yeah,
I can't believe he won't be fined.
That's a code of conduct for me.
So Misha Zverev benefits from the boredom of Bernard Tomic, and progresses.
Oh, just a quick note on the contrary to all of that. I mean, just a word on Jack Sock, who put out a tweet today, having won his match in four sets. Goodness knows how he did it. He was walking around in what looked like a boot or something the other day.
He had a sort of bionic foot going on at Queen's.
He did. So well done for getting out on the court and winning his match. Also, I think I don't know what he threw. I think he threw a towel into the crowd aimed at one particular lad. And it was snatched away from the boy that he was aiming it at. And he's put out a tweet tonight, Jack Sock, and said, "If anybody knows who that boy was that didn't get the towel that I tried to throw to him, let me know, because I'm going to go and sort him out and give him a towel and sign it for him."
Oh.
That's nice, isn't it?
It's nice.
Yeah, good for him.
It's nice to be nice.
Yeah.
I've got to go on the radio very quickly, David, so we'll come back in a minute with our preview of day three.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right.
So I think we've covered all the main results and stories from an eventful and intriguing day two, not necessarily for the right reasons, but it's certainly given us a lot plenty to talk about. So what do we have on day three? Well, Centre Court really has the best of it on day three, and so it should. Obviously it's Centre Court, but it really, really has the best of it tomorrow. It has Murray, Konta and Nadal.
Yeah, it starts with Joe Konta against Donna Vekic, which was a final, wasn't it? Just a couple of weeks ago in Nottingham, was it, I think?
It was, yeah. There.
A cracking match as well. And Donna Vekic, who, I mean, she's had some pretty lean years on the court the last two or three years, having broke on the scene as a 16-year-old. She's 21 now, and we haven't heard too much about her. We had her as a guest on the Tennis Podcast going back about 5 years ago now, 4 or 5 years ago, and she looked like the starlet who was going to make it big in the sport, and really she hasn't done a huge amount.
Starlet.
Well, is that a good word?
I don't like that word.
You don't like
David.
That word? Why is that?
Because I think star is a gender-neutral word.
Right. Is starlet a gender
you wouldn't
unneutral
call
neutral word?
I think so, yeah.
I don't think I brought gender into it.
I think it's the feminine of star.
Is it?
Yeah.
Well, it wasn't the intention.
Anyway,
quite happy to be called a starlet.
Fine. Great.
Okay, star
noted.
Then. Right, she was a star
noted
in the making.
Future.
Catherine Whittaker's put me in my box immediately here on the Tennis Podcast. Thanks very much for that. Johanna Konta is going to play Donna Vekic, who is not a starlet, everybody. She's a star.
She's a star.
Or she would have been if she'd had better tennis results. Anyway, she had a good one against Jo Konta, and Konta now is very much the one who's favoured to win that match on paper. But could be interesting, couldn't it?
Certainly could be interesting.
Who's going to win?
Yeah, I think Konta is going to win.
All right, fine.
But it could be interesting. I thought Su Weishe would make it interesting yesterday, and that wasn't particularly interesting. So.
No. Well, anyway.
Just as Konta's very, very good.
Andy Murray against Dustin Brown.
As I said yesterday, I think it'll be entertaining, but actually the way that Dustin Brown plays will bring out the best in Andy Murray. I think it'll be an entertaining straight setter.
Fine. Probably agree. Rafael Nadal against Donald Young.
Oh, poor old Donald Young.
He's going to get eaten for breakfast, using
breakfast
that old
again,
phrase again.
Sorry.
He's going to get eaten for brunch. Anyway, court number one, Kei Nishikori against Sergei Stakhovsky, who knocked out Roger Federer when he was 116 in the world.
He's qualified here this year, Stakhovsky. I think much as Nishikori isn't in love with the grass, I think he will win.
Tell you what, that is a really interesting match, isn't it? A proper baseliner and somebody who takes the ball incredibly early in Kei Nishikori against Sergei Stakhovsky, who's going to serve and volley, chip and charge. I'd like to see that.
But I'm quite sure you probably can see it, David. You're in the right job if you want to see it.
Right. Nobody bother me for the 2.5 hours that that's on. I don't care about the fact that I'm supposed to be doing Andy Murray commentary on BBC Radio 5 Live. That text has just come through. Anyway, ladies singles to follow. Women's singles, that's what it should say, isn't it? Wang
quite
against
right too.
Venus Williams. I'm reading off the app, everybody.
Tian Wang, coached by Peter McNamara.
Oh, yeah. That's good knowledge.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, he's been coached. She's been coached by Peter McNamara for quite some time. He does some work with the Chinese Federation, but she's his main player. They met in the first round of the French Open, and Venus won quite handily. And she's better on grass than she is on clay. But then Qian Wang, well, actually no, I'm not sure how good Qian Wang is on grass. She's barely played on grass before right. in her career, according to Peter McNamara.
Well, we'll find out tomorrow.
Venus
Day
is winning
three
that,
of Wimbledon. Simona Halep is on after that against the Brazilian woman Beatriz Haddad-Maier, who beat Laura Robson in the previous round.
She didn't take an awful lot of beating, but yeah, she did.
No, it wasn't one of Laura Robson's greatest days. Number two court starts at 11:30 with Heather Watson against Anastasia Sevastova, who, I tell you what, she's had some results lately.
She has had some
Mallorca
results.
Mallorca champion.
I think that might be a bridge too far for Heather Watson.
Really?
I'm sure she'll fight gutsily. As Heather Watson does, but I think Sevastova is really good.
She is good. She beat Jo Konta at the US Open last year. Joe Wilfried Tsonga against Simona Bilelli will follow that. Then it's Marin Cilic, the finalist here this year, against Florian Meyer.
And Cilic is winning that.
Yep.
Any upset alerts for us, David?
Alina Vesnina against Victoria Azarenka. I don't know whether who would
tricky.
Be the upset there, because
I
the seeded player is Vesnina. But that's not an upset of former
Good
world
match.
Number one beats.
Great
is it?
Match. Is that court number three?
Yeah, I'm going to watch that one. No, I've already said I'm going to watch the one between Nishikori and Stakhovsky.
There's enough
two
of you to split in half,
eyes.
David.
Or two TVs.
You could form sort of two average-sized people out of one David Law.
Very true. Aliosh Bedonet against Damir Zhuma after that. I'll tell you what, you wouldn't want to be a tennis ball in Camilla Giorgi against Madison Keys, would you?
No, but Madison Keys looked good yesterday. I think Keys is coming through that. I don't know what Georgie's been doing for the last year or so.
She went love 5 down against Elise Cornet in the first round after about 11 minutes and still won. So she's been doing that for starters. elsewhere, are there any... Oh, tell you what, Yelena Ostapenko is out on court number 12. That's quite difficult. Fourth match up. Although her opponent, Françoise Abanda, I saw her lose 6-love, 6-love. Who was that to?
6-love to Wozniacki. Ooh. In the first round of the French.
That's
yeah.
just plain mean, isn't it?
Yeah, she was pretty upset as she left the court there. So let's hope she's a better grass courter than
let's
she
Let's see
a
who the
quarter.
TBA match is, because they always put these matches to be arranged, don't
yeah,
they?
Yeah, Wozniacki was TBA today, Bishinsky, Jeannie Bouchard was TBA yesterday, and that didn't pan out too well for her.
Do you know who
floods
it is this
of
time?
Tears as she left the court.
This year's champion is TBA today, for tomorrow rather, Petra Kvitova. Up against Madison Brengel. That is TBA. So if matches on centre or court one or court two go really quickly, it'll be chucked on there, won't it?
I once held a koala with Madison Brengel. I know that's not a name drop of David Law-esque proportions, but yeah.
I don't get that one. Where did that happen?
It happened at a zoo in Melbourne.
Right.
You know how the Australian Open do... they call them colour vision opportunities, where they take players out and about in the Melbourne
what,
wilderness.
You've got to go hold a koala.
And crews are invited along for just a little feature opportunity. And they took Madison Brengel after she reached the fourth round. They took her to the Melbourne Zoo a couple of years ago. I mean, it wasn't as good as the guide dog puppy vision opportunity, which was officially the best day of my life. But... we held a koala. That's the punchline.
Is that going to help a win?
Or we sort of stroked a koala whilst you actually can't hold a koala. The public can't hold koalas in Victoria, in the state of Victoria. You can in Queensland. I've held a koala in Queensland, but you can't in Victoria. So you have to have an official designated person holding the koala. And you just stroke.
Who made up that rule and why?
It seems completely arbitrary, doesn't it? It's something to do with the protection of the species.
Right.
On that note...
This has been the Tennis Podcast. You wouldn't guess it, but it's the Koala Special.
This has been the Tennis Podcast Koala Special on day two of Wimbledon 2017. We have, as always, been brought to you in association with The Telegraph and with Eurosport, and we'll be back tomorrow.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.